Go back to Godhead. He fell down. He merged in the Brahma Jyoti or something of that sort, which is tantamount to going to hell, even though it appears like liberation, appears something nice, but actually it's tantamount to hell. So anyway, Putana, because she had a little devotion, she got the position like mother. So we can all, I mean, not that we should be complacent at all, but we should at least have this confidence at heart that if I really try my best, then Krishna will help. You may have heard Prabhupada one time, one devotee asked Prabhupada that you say that if we just chant 16 rounds a day, follow the four regulative principles and engage in service, that at the end of this life we'll go back to Godhead. But she said to Prabhupada, it sounds too easy. It can't be that easy, can it? And Srila Prabhupada said to her, do you think that I would lie to you? So mercy is there. So much mercy is there. And we can get that mercy. And even though we are, you know, we're not very significant devotees and we may be struggling in so many ways, but Krishna is watching all of us. Krishna knows all of us. And Krishna is caring for all of us, actually. There's one nice story. I've mentioned these stories before, so you probably heard them. There's one very nice story. Prabhupada went to Germany first time, I think it was 1969. There was one boy there, Shivananda. So it was him and Prabhupada together for about 2 weeks. Just imagine living with Prabhupada. Just the two of you for 2 weeks. So, they had a nice relationship going. And at one point, Prabhupada said to Shivananda, Shivananda Prabhu, will you pray to Krishna for me? So Shivananda, you know, he'd been a devotee perhaps 3 years, maximum 3 years. And naturally thought, what, me? Pray for Prabhupada, pray to Krishna. He said, Prabhupada, I can't pray for you. I mean, he would think that why would Prabhupada need anyone to pray for him? But he said, how can I pray to Krishna? Krishna wouldn't hear what I said. But Prabhupada said, no. Krishna will hear your prayer. You're a devotee. Krishna knows you. So Krishna knows all of us, actually. The point I'm trying to make here is that Krishna is so kind, so merciful. People look around, where can I find a person to take shelter of? A politician, a boss, a family member, a husband, take shelter of my husband, take shelter of my wife, take shelter of my parents. People are looking for some shelter where I can feel secure, that I'm being looked after, my interests will be protected. But these people can't help us much, unless they're devotees, of course, then they can help us. Otherwise, materialistic parents, friends, and countrymen, they can't help us. We may think they can, it may look like they can. Bank balance, motor car, house. We may think, oh, I'm comfortable now. I'm secure. But these are referred to as fallible soldiers. There's one verse in the second canto, I forget the verse number, but it begins, Dehapatya, Kalatradishu, Atmasanyeshvasatsvapi. That people surround themselves with armies. These things like bank balance, house, motor car, friends, and so on, they're compared to armies for protection. People surround themselves with armies of these security devices, but they're fallible soldiers. As soon as the enemy attacks, the enemy is Maya. As soon as the enemy attacks, whether you have one fallible soldier or a million fallible soldiers, they're immediately smashed to the ground and you're left exposed and you get smashed. So we shouldn't take shelter of anyone other than Krishna. and Krishna is so kind to his devotees. So it's very nice to meditate on how Krishna is very kind to his devotees. There are a number of nice instances, and this instance of Putana is taken to be the main one. Kaliya is taken to be the second one, although he didn't get the same mercy that Putana did. So this the relationship between Krishna and his devotees is very deep, very personal, very affectionate. There's one nice verse in the ninth canto. Lord Narayan is speaking to Devasa Muni. Devasa is being chased by the Sudarshan Chakra after he offended Maharaj Ambarish. So Lord Narayan tells him that, I can't withdraw this chakra. Even though it's my chakra, I can't withdraw it. You have to go and approach my devotee, and if he excuses you, then the chakra will be withdrawn. So then the Lord spoke one verse. How does it go? Something like, Bhaktya Hridayam Mayam. Anyway, the English is that the Lord is saying that the devotees are in my heart, and I'm in the hearts of my devotees. My devotees know nothing other than me, and I know nothing other than my devotees. This is Krishna, but Krishna as Bhagavan. There are these three features, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Krishna as Bhagavan, he doesn't really recognize the conditioned souls. He expands himself into Paramatma. And Paramatma does all that. But Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original Supreme Lord, what is he doing? He simply knows his devotees. He simply knows his devotees. So this relationship between Krishna and his devotees is very deep. Just like you may know, it's a little amusing, but it's very nice when you think about it. Krishna, when he was a little baby in Gokula, when Nanda Maharaj would come home from herding the cows, Krishna would take Nanda Maharaj's shoes. Have you seen that picture? Carrying Nanda Maharaj's shoes on his head. Such a nice little boy serving his father. And you can just imagine Nanda Maharaj seeing little Krishna doing this. He'd feel so happy. Then Krishna would run, sort of toddle in a rather clumsy way, to get one big cushion. Nanda Maharaj, they didn't use chairs in those days. They just sat on the ground. So Nanda Maharaj, he had a big cushion because he's the king of the cowherds. So it was a big heavy cushion. And little toddler Krishna would go and grab the cushion and try and pull it over, struggle with this cushion. It was so heavy and he's so small. Now he's pulling it, then he falls over and he gets up and he tries to pull it again. Really struggling. But determined that he must do it. So then some other adult who's there, they see that, oh, there's little Krishna. And it's so nice, so sweet. He's trying to serve his father. But he's struggling so much, so the adult thinks, well, let me help him. So the adult comes over and says, don't worry, Krishna, I'll take the cushion. I'll help you. So the adult grabs hold of the cushion. But then Krishna slaps their hand. No, no, I want to do this. I want to do it. Let me do it. So Krishna would do like that. So in a sense it looks like a sort of very cute childhood scene. But actually Krishna is expressing his heart that because his relationship with Nanda Maharaj is so deep, it's such a wonderful, loving relationship, that he is prepared even to struggle just to offer a little service to Nanda Maharaj. Or another very classic example which you've probably heard is Ram with Sita. Sita was stolen by Ravana. So Ram, of course, he's God, and he knows he's God. He knows he's quite capable of dispensing with Ravan just like that, and Ravan would be dead. And just like that, and Sita would be returned immediately, not even in an instant, and everything would be finished, the whole, you know, problem would be solved altogether. But what did Ram do? Ram struggled and struggled. He underwent such pain. And finally he got Sita back. Now it's not that Ram, you know, that he wasn't capable of just doing everything just like that and it was done. He's quite capable. So one reason why Ram went through that apparent struggle for a whole year or whatever it was, is that he wants to make the point of what lengths he's prepared to go to for his devotee. Not that he has to, but he has such feeling for his devotee, Sita, that he's prepared to struggle for her. He's prepared to undergo difficulty. I don't know if any of you have read the complete Ramayana, but there's one, it's being translated by one devotee right now, ISKCON devotee, slowly, but surely, but slowly. So there's some very nice verses. When Sita is first stolen, and Ram realizes that Sita's been stolen, the exact words I forget, but Ram, in a mood of anger and despair, furious mood, he just starts calling out to nowhere, just calling out into space. He doesn't know what's happened to Sita, who's done it, if anyone's done something or what's going on. He just doesn't know. But he calls out that return Sita right now. I want Sita now. If you don't return Sita, I'll destroy the whole universe. I'll immediately destroy the entire universe. I'll destroy everything. Just for Sita. Just for one Sita. He's prepared. He doesn't care that the universe may be there with everything and all the living entities who are non-devotees. But for his devotee, he's saying, you return Sita now, otherwise I'll destroy everything. So these are just to give us some idea of the intensity of the affection between the Lord and his devotees. It's not something like the affection we see within this material world, this, you know, you could just say so-called affection. There's some sort of affection there between man and woman or friends or parents and children like that. But it's very, I mean, the real sort of heartfelt feelings are very thin, actually. But in the case of Krishna and his devotees, there's very deep love. And there's one very interesting example given in Nectar of Devotion, which I took out, I thought it was very appropriate. It illustrates this point nicely. That when Abhimanyu was killed in the Battle of Kurukshetra, Abhimanyu is the son of Subhadra and the husband of Uttara. Actually, he'd just quite recently been married to Uttara, and she was pregnant at the time with Maharaj Parikshit in her womb. So they're just newly married. So he's very young. I heard once he was only 16. Anyway, he was just a very young man. And his mother was there also. They were both there, Uttara and Subhadra. They were both there on the edge of the battlefield. And you can imagine, we all know mothers are so affectionate to their children, and a newly married wife is very affectionate to her husband. So Abhimanyu was killed right under Krishna's nose, like almost in Krishna's direct presence. And even Krishna had said that when Abhimanyu went into that to make that special attack on that special formation, only he knew how to enter that formation, but unfortunately didn't know how to get out. Someone else, was it Arjuna, or someone who knew how to get out was meant to stay with him, but they got separated. But Krishna said, don't worry, I'll oversee this. Actually, Krishna was driving the chariot of Arjuna. So don't worry, this will go on under my protection. But Abhimanyu was then killed. So, Subhadra, the mother, when Subhadra was told that Abhimanyu was killed, almost in Krishna's presence, just practically under his nose, even though Krishna had said that, don't worry, I'll protect you, but still somehow it happened. So you can imagine how a mother might feel, you know, towards someone like Krishna who'd said, oh, I'll protect him. But it's described that Subhadra and Uttara, their feelings for Krishna, their love for Krishna, was not affected even to the smallest degree by that. Not even to the smallest degree. So it's, you know, a very thick, very deep, loving relationship between Krishna and his devotees. And that love transcends bodily considerations, material considerations. So anyway, Putana is such a nice example of this, and we're all very fortunate. You're all very fortunate. I guess we're all very fortunate, and undeserving though we may be. So let us hold on to Krishna's lotus feet, and we'll also get some of that mercy. Any questions or comments?
You mentioned that when Krishna was, or the coward was afraid of Krishna, that they accumulated bias colored over many, many lives.
Yeah.
So, but we also understand that they are eternally liberated, so that they...
Not all of them. No. Some of the cowherd boys are eternally liberated souls who descend with Krishna. They go with him wherever he goes, and they just take part in his pastimes. That's their life. But others, and the same applies with the gopis, the same applies with those who are in parental rasa, in all the rasas it applies, that certainly amongst those devotees in the different rasas, there is like a core group, you could say, who are definitely eternal associates. In so many cases, they're actually they're not jivas. They're not even jivas. They're direct manifestations of the internal potency of the Lord. They're actually special expansions of Lord Balaram, although they're not counted as Vishnu Tattva. They can't fall down. So they're there. But then we understand that devotees who practice devotional service and who become perfect in devotional service in one lifetime or over a number of lifetimes, before they actually return back to the spiritual realm, they get a final test. I mean, you could say it's a test, it's also like nectar. They get to go to where Krishna is currently performing his pastimes within the material world, and then they take up their eternal position, and then they have like a practice run with Krishna, and yeah, rehearsal, see how they do. And I assume that they generally do well, and then they go back to Godhead. Like with the gopis, it's described that when Krishna first held the rasa dance, he played his flute, and all the gopis, they took it that Krishna's calling us, so they all ran. Despite the obstacles, there are so many obstacles. So generally, the great majority, got through the obstacles and got to Krishna, and they took part in that dance, but some didn't. Some didn't. They just couldn't get away. Their parents or husbands or whoever locked them up and just tied them down, or literally, and stopped them by force. So in some cases, some died. and went back to Godhead in the same bodies. In the same bodies they went back to Godhead. Others, though, they were tied up and they just had to stay there. So then, you know, that the night passed, the rasa dance was going on, but they were there with their family members. And then the next day came, and then the rasa dance was finished, at least for that night. And then they were released. So while they were locked up, they were just absorbed in thinking of Krishna, that I must be with Krishna. I want to be with Krishna. That was all they could think of. So our acharyas explained that the reason they weren't able to get away was because they were these types of people that I was just referring to. They became perfect in their previous lifetimes. Now they've got the opportunity to have this sort of practice run with Krishna. But there were some faint traces of contamination still there. So they couldn't get away. But then, as they spent the whole night just thinking and thinking and thinking so intensely about Krishna, that fire of transcendental anxiety burnt away the last traces of contamination. So the next time Krishna blew the flute, which was the next night actually, they were also able to join Krishna. So that idea applies with the cowherd boys. Yeah. There are different groups within the cowherd boys and the gopis and parents who come from different previous lifetimes. It's described quite elaborately about the gopis. About the cowherd boys, I'm not aware of an elaborate description of what different backgrounds they came from. But in the case of the gopis, some were rishis, some were women who wanted to marry Lord Ram, but he'd taken his ekapatni vrat. And there were others also. There was many groups. Questions or comments? Would you?
Yes. You explained to us about Krishna's mercy, does his mercy extend to establishing us in different platforms of devotion, of relationships with Krishna?
Yeah.
So explaining his mercy to his devotees, Katana had very little, she thought about devotion to him, and he stated here that his killing was no different from his love.
Yes.
Does Krishna's mercy bring us to the point of establishing
a
particular relationship?
Yes. Yes. A particular relationship only occurs on the level, it really only occurs on the level of prema, ultimately. And one can only achieve prema by Krishna's mercy. One cannot elevate oneself, you know, like through self-elevation to prema. One is awarded it by Krishna. So she was awarded that by Krishna. As far as, I thought you were going to ask about how come it said that his love for Mother Yashoda and his killing of Putana are sort of like parallel. Because in one he's being very violent and, you know, she's Putana suffered, she was screaming and writhing, and it's described her legs and arms were just waving wildly. So she was going through, you know, horrific experience as she was dying. But it's being said that this was the same as Krishna's love for Yashoda. So the point is that the end result in both cases is the same. Krishna is cleansing Putana. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said that as gold is purified by fire, so the devotee's heart is purified through the fire of ordeal. Now, don't become pessimistic now and think that we're going to have to go through a lot of pain. Well, we may have to if we hold on to our material attachments. But as we try, as we make efforts, really try to advance, then through making that effort, like struggling to serve Krishna, through that fire of struggling, trying our very, very best, then we are purified. Krishna purifies us, and eventually he awards us his own association. And Mother Yashoda already has his own association, and so many pastimes are going on between them. So in that sense, his killing Putana and his loving exchanges with Yashoda, the end result is not different. That's why it's said that Krishna is all good.
And then in some cases they kind of fabricate variations on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness.
Which sound like Krishna consciousness. So innocent devotees who are not really so knowledgeable in Krishna consciousness, they may hear these ideas and think, oh yes, very good. You know, this is a nice Krishna conscious idea. One such idea, if you've got the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, I don't know if you've all got that. It's available now. We have the single volume Prabhupada Lilamrita. It's the entire six volumes, which as it was previously published. So the whole, all six in one. Very, very interesting. So somewhere in there, there's the story of how one group of devotees back in, I think, 1971 or so, in the very early days, they somehow or other managed to create the philosophy that Prabhupada was actually an incarnation of Krishna, and we should all accept him as an incarnation of Krishna. And they were in New Vrindavan at the time, and they started propagating that philosophy or trying to amongst the devotees, and somehow or other some of the very innocent devotees, they accepted the idea. But when Prabhupada heard about it, he exclaimed that these devotees, that the original group who developed the idea, that they were actually poisoning the other devotees in a philosophical sense or a spiritual sense. Like, for example, if you hear criticism or if you hear blasphemy of devotees, then you may not know one way or the other whether whatever is being said, whether it's true or not, but someone is saying that, oh, this devotee is like this and that, speaking critically. So you may not know, but you're hearing. So that sound vibration goes in and it affects the state of one's heart. It actually contaminates one's heart. So this we refer to as becoming poisoned spiritually. There was one interesting example. When the first group of devotees went to India with Srila Prabhupada back in the very early 70s, then some of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers didn't appreciate Srila Prabhupada at all. And they would always try to minimize what Srila Prabhupada had done in preaching Krishna consciousness by trying to rationalize that he was successful for this reason or that reason. You know, just different. Like one of them, just as an example, they knew, of course, that Srila Prabhupada had a history in business. He'd been in the medical or the pharmaceutical business in his household days. So, and he was an accomplished businessman. So one of his godbrothers offered the idea that his success was because he's a good businessman. So there are ideas like this. So many ideas. So when this first group of devotees went to India with Srila Prabhupada, they were staying in Mayapur, and one day they heard that there was some function going on in one of the temples of one of Prabhupada's godbrothers on the other side of the river, on the other side of the Ganges, in Navadweep town. So a group decided...